Hello, everybody, and welcome to Absurd Hypotheticals, the show where we overthink dumb questions so you don't have to. I'm your host, Marcus Lehner, and I'm joined here today by Chris Yee and Ben Storms. Say hi, guys.
Hey, everybody, I'm Chris.
Hey, I'm Ben.
So, not too long ago, it was National Left-Handed Day, which I didn't know was a holiday, but, you know, good for them.
Are any of you left-handed? Because I'm not.
I am not.
No, I know a few left-handed people, though. My grandfather is left-handed, but he was like, he's old school left-handed, where he's born left-handed, but they made everyone in school do right-handed stuff, and you had to learn to write and everything with your right hand, so he's like mostly ambidextrous at this point.
Yeah, my dad does, he's right-handed, he does everything right-handed, but then he writes with his left hand. That's only thing he does left-handed.
Interesting.
How did that happen? Because as far as I know, writing is the worst fucking part about being left-handed.
I have no idea how he developed that, but that's how he does it.
He really likes sitting in the left-handed desks. They were very well positioned, so.
He just happened to have that desk in high school. He was like, well, it's a left-handed desk. I gotta be left-handed. I can't just write righty on this.
It's right there in the name of the desk, so.
But speaking of products for left-handed people specifically, there's a new one this year brought to us by Nabisco, I think is them. The people who make Oreos. Yeah, Nabisco. So they have made left-handed Oreos.
What is that?
Yeah, what does that mean?
So the Oreo itself has not changed. It is the Oreo is already a circle, the perfect shape, you know, good for all directions. I don't know.
orientations.
Right.
Yeah. But they have made the box open from the other way.
I see.
Which I don't quite understand, because if you just turn it upside down, doesn't it just open left-handed anyway?
Yeah, but then they're not Oreos. It's Oreos.
It's practically a fucking, oh no, I can't think of words today.
What is that called? When it's the same backwards.
It's not an anagram.
Race car, and wow, and Bob, and mom.
God, I'm thinking of all entirely unrelated words. Palindrome.
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 There we
go.
Yeah,
that's it.
Almost a palindrome, but not quite.
Why don't they make palindrome a palindrome? It'd be so much easier to remember.
That'd be really nice, yeah.
I don't know. Oreo just doesn't give a fuck anymore. They just make, like, anything.
Yeah, well, actually, sort of. So on that note, I saw at one point that there are cookies and cream flavored Oreos, which is a goddamn Oreo flavored Oreo.
Yeah. Because everything that's cookies and cream flavored is just Oreo flavored.
Right. That's just shit they with just Oreos in it. The cookie is Oreo and cookies and cream. And the cream is Oreo cream.
Do they put, like, cookie bits in the cream?
So, yeah, I think it's basically, it's an Oreo in which the cream also has some Oreo in it. So it's an Oreo that tastes about 1% more like the cookie.
Have they made Oreos where they, like, put an Oreo in an Oreo?
Yo, dog. Courage like Oreos. I'm not going to finish it. You get the idea.
Yeah, I mean, I thought you were going to talk about, like, the Buckwild flavors that came out with the fan-picked flavors, which was, like, cherry Coke with
That's
Pop
not a
Rocks
good idea.
In it.
That sounds disgusting.
Yeah, they were just all terrible, and people were like, they're actually pretty good. It's weird.
So I think he brought this up at one point in some group chat that we're both in, and I think there was one that I actually said I would try. I can't remember what it was.
I'm not opposed to trying a fancy Oreo. It's... The problem is committing to an entire box.
Right. Yeah. You need like a multi-pack.
Yeah, boxes of Oreos are pretty big.
You need like a half sleeve of six flavors that are sold one like variety unit.
Why don't they have that?
I think they should have a subscription box where every month you get like two sleeves of different new flavors. I would not get it, but people would, because people are stupid. They love subscription boxes, apparently.
I don't think I could have a monthly Oreo subscription box, because the amount of time it takes me to eat Oreos is like 2 days at most, regardless of how many Oreos I have.
This is true.
So if you send me a month's supply of Oreos, they're still going to be gone in 2 days.
Yeah.
I'm just going to have eaten a lot more Oreos.
That's accurate.
So you just have to send me Oreos like each week, and then I have like a good Monday, Tuesday, like to lead into the week.
I feel like
Hump
you are
day still sucks, but
you are their target customer.
Yeah. Problem is Oreos are just really bad for you, and they're like $1 million. So that's my ringing endorsement of Oreos.
Yep.
You love Oreos.
Now for lefties, but they're still expensive as fuck and not good for you.
Is there an upcharge on the left-handed ones, or are they the same price?
Actually, they're giving away for free if you happen to live in left-hand West Virginia.
I thought you were going to say, if you could prove that you're left-handed, you have to do like a challenge with your left hand.
Right.
Nope, left-handed or not, each one of the 390 citizens of Left Hand West Virginia will be getting a pack of left-handed Oreos in the mail soon.
I'm sure they'll appreciate that.
I also just love, like, this article that's talking about the left-handed Oreos. It's talking about the holiday, and it's like, yeah, you know, lefties can take pride in all the other left-handed people that have, like, done great accomplishments. I'm like, it's not really a disability.
Right.
It's like people like Albert Einstein, Oprah Winfrey, George Bush, Barack Obama, all left-handed. I'm like, yeah, it's not, like, something that's going to prevent them from doing great things.
Yeah.
It's not a deficit. It's just you do things with the other hand. Anyhow, that's all I have to say about left-handed things, which means we can dive into our first question, which is, what if you could control the weather? Ben, I'm going to let you start us off because your name is Ben Storms.
That is very appropriate, actually, that I lead this one off. You're right. I actually didn't think about that when we decided the order, but in retrospect, it makes perfect sense.
How did you not think of that,
Ben? Already failing.
I mean, I don't know about you. I mean, okay. Do you frequently think about what your last name is? Because I do not.
Well, I would if my last name was Storms.
You get used to it, dude. I don't know.
Mine isn't a word. Mine doesn't mean anything.
Whenever I see your name, all I think about is, do you know that vine that's like from the old cartoon with the dinosaurs where it just goes, yee?
Nope.
Nope. Okay, just me. But every time I see your name, that's all I can think of. It's great. Okay. Anyway.
Right. I'm sure one of our listeners will be able to relate.
Yep.
Namely you when you listen
to the episode. Yep, just me. All right. Anyway, it's a great vine. Rip vine. Anyway. So, weather control. So sort of to start, let's talk about an actual real life form of kind of weather control, cloud seeding. So cloud seeding, it's kind of been around since like the 1940s. Basic idea is that you sort of just like disperse shit into clouds, and then what you disperse up there gives like the water things to condense around, so it's more likely for it to rain.
Got it.
People have tried to use it a lot. It may or may not work. I think it's kind of BS, but it can't really be proven because, I mean, it's weather, so there's not exactly like a good control group here.
Didn't China do it for the Olympics one
year?
Yeah,
they definitely, so they did cloud seeding. I don't know if it actually did anything or not.
It rained, Ben, is what it did.
Well, yeah, but I mean, that happens a lot anyway, so it's kind of hard to say definitively whether that caused it or not, which is kind of the problem with cloud seeding. But anyway, the important point is that there is actually a company in the United Kingdom that uses cloud seeding to guarantee that it will not rain on your wedding day.
What?
This costs approximately £100,000, which is around $128,000.
That is a lot of money.
They do give a 100% guarantee. You get your money back if it does rain.
Oh, wow.
I mean, but I mean, like, it's probably not going to rain anyway. I think it's probably a pretty safe bet for them.
I was going to say that's very expensive for something that's not scientifically proven.
Yeah. I mean, that's yeah. So basically, you know, they do cloud seeding up, leading up to it to try to like get rid of the rain clouds before your wedding day is kind of the idea. Also, hilariously, on their website, so they have a blog post about it. At the bottom, there's a link to a page on their main website that says to go to it for more information. And on that page, there's like three sentences and then a link to the blog post, which it says to go to for more information. So I kind of got, I actually literally did not initially notice that the blog post was the same one I'd already read until I got about a paragraph in. I was like, oh yeah, I already read this shit.
It's like that index card. It's like, want to know how to keep an idiot busy? Flip the card over.
Yeah, I basically,
and it says it on both sides.
This British travel company punked me with that prank, actually. So it's entirely possible, and I would say probable, that no one has actually purchased this service from this company. They're just sort of generally a, like, travel and, like, wedding planning company that also advertises the fact that they do cloud seeding to get rid of the rain for your wedding day.
Have, like, any proof that they did this?
I think, so, there were a bunch of articles about it back when they first announced it, like, shortly after. And at that point, no one had done it yet. That was back in 2015. They're still advertising it. I don't know if anyone's done it yet. I didn't, like, email them to find out because, I mean,
That seems like something where, like, you can order it and then they just, like, don't do anything. And if it doesn't rain, then they get a bunch of money. And if it does rain, then they give you your money back.
They say they have, like, a team of meteorologists and, like, pilots and shit. So I'm sure they would try to show it to you. I mean, I'm sure they do something. I'm sure they actually do cloud seeding. I just doubt it actually does anything. But importantly, this does give us the makings of a very pretty lucrative business, because you, unlike them, can 100% legitimately prove that you can actually control the weather.
So you can charge more than $100,000.
See, I think you actually can't. I think that your market is so small if you do that, that it's not worth it. I think you're trying to get an economic of scale situation here. So I think...
I don't know, Ben. I'm thinking because there's only 365 days a year. There's got to be at least 365 loaded people with families getting married.
I don't know. That's a lot of money. Like, people spend a lot on weddings, but that's a lot of money for a... I don't know. So sort of my plan, charge $10,000. In the grand scheme of weddings, that's not that much for a lot of weddings, which is fucking terrifying. But, I mean, it's a pretty big wedding if you're splashing $10,000 on stuff, but, like, weddings are very expensive. $10,000 to guarantee good weather is something people would actually do. I figure, charge $10,000, figure you get a couple weddings a week, $10,000 a piece, you're looking over a little over $1 million a year.
That's pretty good.
That's pretty good. And I'm assuming you're going to be at the weddings. You're just going to get to go to a lot of weddings, which is pretty awesome. And if they're splashing 10 grand on weather control, they're probably going to be pretty fucking nice weddings. So, like, that's a perk right there. You're just going to be flying around, going to nice weddings, and controlling the weather. That sounds awesome, right?
That does sound
also,
pretty awesome.
Also, they have to be nice to you, because if they're not nice to
right,
you...
Right, you make it rain. Not the cool way with the money, but, rain. Like, you actually make it rain. So, but I think, so as cool as that is, as fun, much fun as that would be, I think you also have another very real, very possible source of income. And for this one, I'm going to actually take a quick segue and tell a story that I think is one of the coolest stories, like, ever. So we're going to talk about Doc Ellis. So Doc Ellis was a pitcher for the Pittsburgh Pirates back in the 60s and 70s. And in 1970, they had a game in San Diego against the Padres, and he flew in the day before. Took some LSD, went to a friend's place in LA, partied some, fell asleep, woke up, took some more LSD. So he thought he had a rest day. Actually, he was pitching that day. And he only realized this pretty shortly before the game. So he like, freaks out, gets up, rushes to the stadium, gets there, is on LSD, is tripping. Tells no one about this, goes out and pitches, and he throws a no-hitter.
Oh my god.
So it wasn't the best no-hitter. He had 8 walks and he hit a batter, but he threw a no-hitter while on LSD.
Holy shit.
So after the game, there are a couple of great like quotes from him about it. After the game, someone asked him if he saw the game's final play, and he responded, "Did I see it? You should have seen it the way I saw it." And then a couple weeks later, he finally told us about the LSD, and he admitted that he couldn't tell which batter he was facing. All he could tell was if they were left or right-handed.
Oh, God.
So, obviously, this worked out pretty well for him somehow. But don't you think that if he could have, like, woken up that morning, realized what was happening, called someone, slipped them, like, 10 grand, 15 grand, and a couple of front row seats, they could have made it rain, gotten the game rained out, give some time to collect himself?
Mm.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think, you know, baseball is the main sport we're going to be working here, because football gets played in basically any weather. Basketball and hockey are indoors, but, you know, there's baseball games, like, every day.
Also, like, you can just make a call. You just watch the baseball, and was it 6.5 innings? If they're ahead, if yep. one team's ahead, you call that team's manager and be like,
"Hey, do you want to win this game?
You think you got this? You feeling lucky?"
I didn't think about, too, like in football, you could technically, like, if you have a bad quarterback and your opponent has a really good quarterback, you could, like, just make it super windy and, like, you know, level the odds a little bit, but baseball's gonna be your main bread and butter.
Also, making baseball 6.5 innings only would be actually an improvement to the sport.
It's pretty
overall.
Nice, right? Getting nice,
like who needs the last 2.5 innings? Like, you've done the baseball.
Yeah, getting nice, like, hour and 40 minutes, and it's pretty good. So that's my business plan here is your front, your main source there, your reliable source is your wedding gig. But I think you also, you sort of get it known out there that if there's ever a player who goes out, you know, maybe he's a player who plays in, like, St. Louis and the nightlife isn't that great, and they go out to LA and he gets a little too crazy and doesn't really want to, you know, have to go play baseball for 3.5 hours in the sun that day. You know, maybe just get that day game pushed back a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think your plan, you're going to make a lot of money with this plan.
It's going to be pretty great.
Both your plans.
Yeah. Go to fancy weddings, go to sporting events. Sounds good. So... that's what I got. Marcus, what do you have?
Well, I ignored all the actual weather and went to just lightning, because that's the coolest part of weather.
I mean, lightning is pretty awesome.
So, I actually expected to, like, start looking at lightning facts and be like, okay, I'm a little disappointed. Because my first thought is, could you power a city with lightning? Expecting the answer to be, no, that's static electricity, and no, that's stupid, and, you know, that was going to be the end of it. So, I looked it up. A single lightning bolt can generate 5 to 10 billion joules of energy, which is comparable to an atomic bomb.
Yeah, haven't you seen Back to the Future?
Yeah, that's where I get all my fucking science facts, Mr.
1.21 gigawatts.
Yeah, which is not a real number, I'm pretty sure.
It is if you believe.
So, let's get some more helpful perspective. So, 5 to 10 billion joules per lightning bolt. New York City uses just under 200 billion joules a year. So, if you could harness the power of 20 to 30 lightning strikes, you could power New York City for a whole year.
Okay.
So, obviously, the problem is, how do you harness the energy of lightning? And people actually have been trying to do it. The biggest issue is that you need just, like, a humongous, like, capacitor, because all that energy happens in, like, a fraction of a second. Like, the charge, like, it's just, like, actually pretty crazy, the amount of shit happening in a lightning strike. And to get that into a battery and not have it just dissipate into the ground is pretty tough. But the conclusion of the research was, this is impractical. Lightning doesn't strike enough for this to be worth it. But if we just don't have the money to figure it out. Otherwise, it's possible, we just haven't, it's not economically feasible right now. But if you can make it lightning strike the same place a whole lot, it would be economically feasible. So, can you power the whole world? The world uses 5.67 times 10 to the 20th joules of energy each year.
Yeesh.
Which is the equivalent of 60 to 7 million lightning strikes.
That's a lot.
That's a lot of lightning strikes.
That's spread out over a year, right?
Yeah, it's over a year. So there are 30 million seconds in a year. So you have to catch 2 lightning strikes per second, which sounds like a lot, but it doesn't have to be in one spot. In fact, you're probably going to be spread out across the whole world. So if you got like a few facilities around, like, you know, 2 or 3 per continent, you can probably just do it, like, no problem.
People aren't going to want to live around where it is, right?
Yeah, so there's definitely a NIMBY problem there, not in my backyard.
Yeah.
I did consider this. Obviously, the very first thing is the noise, which comes to my favorite compound word in the English language, thundersnow.
It's pretty awesome.
It sometimes, in some places, has a thunderstorm while it's snowing, which is just like the coolest fucking thing I've ever heard.
It's pretty incredible.
It's up there with moonbows.
Yeah, and what's nice about it is that the sound of thunder only travels 2 to 3 miles in thundersnow, as opposed to, like, infinite miles in a regular thunderstorm. And since you only need, like, a 2 to 3 mile square area, it's not hard to find in, you know, the whole world. it's going to have to be a little further than 2 to 3 miles. So that's for the sound. There's one other lightning problem that I didn't know existed. 95% of lightning is negatively charged, aka, you know, the ground's positively charged compared to the clouds, and, you know, the negative charged lightning hits the ground. That's the regular lightning strike. 5% of them, there's positive charge lightning, where the air above, like on the top of the thunderstorm, gets so positively charged that it shoots a lightning strike. But it usually strikes away from the thunderstorm. So it doesn't go through like the negative below it. It kind of goes from the top, like, and domes away, up to 25 miles away from the lightning storm.
Oh.
So, actual safety tip, if you're like 20 miles away from thunderstorm, you could still get struck by lightning if you're very unlucky. So, again, 25 miles is still not the biggest radius. We got plenty of, like, the Midwest here. There's plenty of just, like, you know, put it in a rainforest or something. Who cares?
You could, like, put it in the ocean too, right?
Yeah, put it in the ocean. Float one on the sea.
Yeah.
So, I think it's actually super feasible. If you could have lightning strike the same place a whole bunch of times, you could actually generate enough power for the world. And then we'd have all this clean energy, and everyone would be happy, and there'd be no more wars, and, I don't know, everyone would be beautiful, and all the other good things that you can imagine.
Could make us more attractive.
Perfect.
But then you would have to, like, you would be working 24/7, basically, nonstop. Yes, yeah.
Do you have to be where the weather is happening, or can you, like, start it and go away?
We didn't really specify the strength of your powers.
It would be tough. And there's other things to consider, too. For example, if you're making a lightning storm in one spot for, like, forever, what does it do to the surrounding weather? Because weather kind of travels and, you know, ripples, and I imagine there's some kind of shockwaves you might have to figure out. You might want to talk to some meteorologists or, you know, maybe just have a couple bad weeks, you know, getting your rhythm going. But there's one other thing that you could do with lightning. And this one, I don't know. I could not understand the exact mechanics of how you would make this work. But I found super cool. Lightning produces positrons, which, if you don't know what that is, it is the antimatter particle to electrons. So lightning will actually produce, is so powerful, it'll actually produce antimatter sometimes.
Cool.
And so when the lightning strikes, you know, it makes the positrons, they hit electrons, and they annihilate each other and produce gamma rays, which obviously are not the good kind of rays.
What if you want to be the Hulk?
Yeah, so they're way up there on the bad-for-you scale. But I found the one useful thing I could find you could do with them is that you can turn regular topaz into blue topaz, which is worth twice as much as regular topaz. So if you want to have a little side gig that involves harnessing antimatter from lightning strikes to turn gems into more valuable gems, you can do that.
I mean, you already solved the energy problem, so I think you deserve this side gig thing.
That is the most, like B-movie science fiction-ass plot I have ever heard.
I know, this is like so Dr. Evil plot, like, I'm gonna harness the lightning to create antimatter. But that's all my cool lightning facts.
Those are pretty cool lightning facts.
I don't want to get struck by lightning anymore, guys.
Wait, you wanted to
Not
before?
Not that I really wanted to okay. in the first place, but I always kind of figured, like, oh, if it happened, it wouldn't be, like, so, so bad. So many people survive getting struck by lightning.
It won't be that
like,
bad.
It'd be a bad day, but, like, some people just come out unfazed, and you're just like, all right.
I've always thought it's pretty bad, personally.
Some people get some really cool scars, though, like those spiderweb, like, burn marks, which obviously can be really bad, but if you get them, like, if you get struck in the right spot and it's the right size lightning strike, it could be super cool, get you with the ladies.
Yeah, I mean, if you survive, then you're like, that's bragging rights. You're just like, yeah, I got hit by lightning. I survived. What's up?
Yeah, I did it. I mean, it's all the small talk you'll ever need. Be like, so, anything interesting about yourself? Yeah, I got struck by lightning once. Look at the scar. They're like, oh, fuck. Chris, what do you have for weather?
So, yeah, when I was thinking about this question, I was thinking about, like, what do people do when they look into the sky? They usually look at the clouds, and they're like, ooh, that looks like a turtle, or that looks like a dog, that looks like a, I don't know, baseball glove.
I think I know where you're going with this.
So, I figured, if I can control the weather, I can control the clouds, too, and I can control the shapes of the clouds. So, I can make, like, my own cloud picture things, and I can do, like, art with the clouds. So, in order to do this, I wanted to look at, like, what tools I have as an artist. So I looked at, like, different types of clouds. And there are the common ones that are, like, cumulus, which is, like, those puffy, fluffy clouds. You see them all the time. It's, like, when you say cloud, it's what you think of.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There's stratus clouds, which are flat and hazy. So
what I think of when you say clouds.
Yeah. They're, like, more two-dimensional. So maybe good for, like, backgrounds in your picture. There's cirrus clouds, which are thin streams, like strands of hair, sort of. So I don't know, if you're making, like, a picture of a person, then you could use it for hair. And there's cirrocumulus clouds, which are patchy, almost like polka dots, sort of. So I don't know, you can make some sort of pattern with those. Those are, like, the more common types of clouds. There are some less common types of clouds. And for the listeners, if you have, like, a computer or, like, a phone somewhere, I recommend looking these up just because this is very visual. I'm going to try to describe them as best as possible, but
paint me a word picture.
Yeah. But, like, looking at a picture, these are pretty cool. So the first one is called Morning Glory Cloud, and they're basically, like, giant, they're, like, rolling clouds, sort of, in, like, rows. So they're, like, giant tubes, almost, and they're in, like, perfect rows. So if you, and it spans for, like, a really long distance. So it's just, like, a bunch of clouds in rows.
Yeah, let me pull it up and see if I can't help your word.
Yeah, I'm also doing this.
Morning glory
clouds. Oh.
Oh, it looks very
weird.
Bizarre.
Yeah. So they're, like, it's like a tube.
Yeah, it's a tube. And they're all, like, in the same.
Yeah.
They're all
and
in rows.
And like, to clarify, it's a tube that is parallel to the ground.
Yeah, it's like horizontal.
Almost like concentric rings, but not rings.
It's someone laid down those string cheeses next to each other. Yes. Like, it literally just looks like that.
But fluffier.
It's like a tube of cloud that's rolling on the ground, and they're all rolling, like, in a row.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
And these clouds, I guess they don't really know, like, how they form, really. Like, why they form. I don't really need to know, because I can control. I can just do it, so.
You might have to know a little bit about how they work to get them to, like, you know, show up.
I don't know about that. I can just do it. another type of cloud is a mammatus cloud. M-A-M-M-A-T-U-S cloud.
Yeah, my Google gave it to me.
And these are like smooth, lumpy. They look really weird. Like, they look so surreal.
They're kind of like the bottom of an egg carton.
No, it looks like the second a water balloon hits a chain link fence. And just like the little bulbous parts are coming through the fence.
If you're watching on like a super slow motion thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, like a super slow motion as the water balloon, before the water balloon pops, as it's coming like through the pokes in the fence.
For some reason, it reminds me of like a sea anemone.
I can see that.
I'm happy I'm helping you with these descriptions.
Yeah. But these are associated with storm fronts, and they're also not really entirely understood how they form, but I don't know. Storm front. I'll make a storm front. And then with all these clouds, you don't want to just have like bland white clouds in your art. You want some sort of color. So to add color, I have some other things. There are noctilucent clouds, and these only happen at twilight. So like when the sun is right below the horizon, but it's still like lighting up the clouds. And actually, it like illuminates the clouds so that it's like a glowing effect.
Oh, yeah. Sort of. I'm looking at it now.
So I can sprinkle these into my picture somehow to add some nice glow effects. And then obviously there are rainbows that I could use, moonbows, which we discovered were a thing.
So are you making these pictures just for yourself as an artist and for people's enjoyment?
I think I would put on like art shows.
Okay.
And maybe like make people pay for them.
When you first started and you were like, you know, people were like, oh, that looks like a cloud and that looks like a horse. I was going to be like, and that one looks like it's buy one, get one at DSW today.
Oh, big ads.
Yeah.
I could do that too, ads. I guess.
I do see a problem with the charging people admission thing which is that it's in the sky. Like, it's going to be kind of hard to.
Well, you can like, I don't know, you could like partner up with a hotel or something, like a beach resort.
Oh, yeah, that works. Go to a residence at, like, Walt Disney World.
Yeah, it's like fireworks. Fireworks are in the sky.
Yeah.
But if I want to add more color, auroras are a thing. You might have heard the aurora borealis.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a weather thing, or is that an atmosphere? Well, I guess it's an atmosphere thing.
Is it like electromagnetic?
Sort of. Yeah, the description of, like, how it actually happens, I didn't really understand, but it was, like, it said, like, the magnetosphere is disturbed by solar winds, and, like, it causes electrons and protons to lose energy, and that emits light, emits color and stuff. I don't know. I didn't understand.
Yeah, I learned why the sky was blue, like, in, like, a actual, like, particle physics class, and it, like, fucking, like, blew my mind. I can't even remember exactly how it worked, but it was basically, like, yeah, the wavelength of light going through the air has the highest probability of exciting this particular thing and reflecting in this particular angle, which happens to be blue.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm like, what?
Okay.
It got into like real high physics shit. Like, we haven't figured out until the last like 10, 20 years.
Yeah. I've definitely Googled that and then saw the description and just like, yeah, I'm not going
to
read that.
It's like, yeah, I'm good. It's blue. That's enough for me to know.
Yeah. Next thing is called a fire rainbow, which is extremely rare, and it's actually formed when refraction from the sun, from sunlight or moonlight, is it's refracted in ice crystals in the atmosphere. And it's basically, like, the look of it is just like it's a fire in the sky, but it's like rainbow colors. It looks cool.
Yeah, it does.
There's some pretty sick photos of this one on the web.
Yeah.
I wonder how many of them are photoshopped.
Yeah, it's a very good question.
Yeah.
But some of them aren't, and those ones still look cool, so.
It really does look like there's like some cool clouds, like wispier clouds, and someone just took like the Photoshop color replacement tool and just went shoonk,
right,
one big stripe across.
Right, exactly.
And then the last thing on this list to add to my art that I'd use is called ball lightning.
Ooh.
Yeah, we talked about this. Didn't we talk about? I feel like we talked about ball lightning. Like
I talked about ball lightning to you off the show.
I was like, didn't we do this last episode?
No. So ball lightning is an unexplained phenomenon. It's basically, there's a ball of lightning, and it's like a sustained ball. So it's not like regular lightning where it just goes away right away. And it, like, moves slowly. And they don't really know why it happens. And there's so little instances of it happening that they can't really study it. And, like, people's accounts of it have been different and unreliable. So they really know, like, nothing about it. Some people say that it like, explodes after a little while. Some people say it just fades away. But I think I could harness this and put it in my art.
I mean, it would be impressive. And then they could study it, Chris. And you could be like, oh, I know how to do it. All you have to do is snap your fingers.
Yeah, that's all you need to do.
Just control the weather. It's all it takes.
It's got to be the middle finger, though. The ring finger does not give you ball light. The ring finger gives you tornadoes. Don't mix them up.
I did want to use tornadoes at some point for my art, but I couldn't really do it. I know they have, like, fire tornadoes, which is cool.
Could you, like, a little tornado just start in a ball pit? Because that would be sweet.
That'd be pretty awesome.
In a ball pit?
Yeah, like just a multicolored ball pit and just put a little tornado inside.
I guess you could do that. Have a giant blender sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, giving me more ideas for my art show.
Maybe it should be my art show.
Ah, don't steal my idea.
Except I'm too busy powering the fucking world, Chris.
Yeah, well, you don't need two people powering the world.
It would help.
I could probably use some help overseas.
It would help.
Nah.
We'll each take a hemisphere.
Also looking up pictures of ball lightning, every like fifth picture is the Magikarp ball lightning.
Yeah, I saw that too.
Which apparently it's very popular.
Yeah, so that's basically what I would do. Those are all the tools that I would use. I just put together awesome art shows in the sky for everyone to see, or for people that pay to see.
Yeah, I mean, I still think you would make more money doing advertisements.
That is true.
I mean, that's how our podcast makes money, is by going into ads. Speaking of which,
this week's ads have been canceled due to a clerical error. Instead, get down to these funky jams.
Welcome back, everybody, and I will say I'm super excited for this next question because this is basically just, like, every dream I've had since me being, like, 8 and till now. and that question is, what if all buildings were made of Legos?
Yeah.
The best toy for all the best boys and girls and adults.
Well, boy, girls doesn't rhyme with toys, so.
Right.
Sorry, I'm trying to think of anything that's toilet that rhymes with girls.
I mean, you could just say girls first. So say toys and then girls and boys.
Yeah, that works.
Oh, yeah, sentence structure's cool. Ben, get me out of this conversation, please. Tell me about your Lego buildings.
Right. So I guess so. Sort of some parameters that we went with here is... So I guess actually just to lead off. So I personally talked about sort of the first day situation. I believe that Chris and Marcus both went sort of like... a year or so out where we've kind of like rebuilt, right?
Yeah.
Is that correct? Yeah.
Yes.
Right. But the important thing is when we say things are built out of Legos, this isn't like it's the actual, all the supporting elements and structural stuff is just Legos. It's not like exactly. Lego facades on things.
Yeah, because they have built like houses out of Legos, but they've had like wood frames to support them, like structurally.
Right.
Yeah, so that doesn't count.
Right.
So we're going to make it better.
We want it to be 100% Lego. And so we said that on the first day situation, it happens to all existing buildings just kind of like snap of the finger situation.
We said you can use glue too, right?
Yes, we said you could use glue, but no like other supporting. You can support your Lego buildings in the way that like, you know, Lego-sized Lego structures are supported with like glue.
Yeah. All right. So Ben, tell us about day one.
So day one. So sort of the first assumption I made was that the buildings turned into... We didn't get into any sort of like complicated Lego structure when the buildings first turned, because I'm sure that you guys will go into ways that Lego buildings are actually possible, at least vaguely, if you use like particular structure stuff. I'm going to say that doesn't really happen, which kind of like to a straight conversion into sort of a standard, you know, the way you would build a Lego house out of, you know, a small size Lego house, but big. So sort of get out of the way, as sort of mentioned, Lego structures are kind of possible. There was an episode of, possibly the only episode, we're not sure, of a show called James May's Toy Stories.
There are more episodes, I believe.
Okay. So there are more episodes. The only one we watched.
I could only find half of that episode. I couldn't find the other half.
So actually, funny story. So the link that Marcus sent us was just the first half. But then for some reason, Daily Motion, when that video ended, skipped to another one that happened to be the second half.
Oh. Not for me.
So very conveniently, I got to see the whole thing. But so it is possible, but I know there, like we said, they cheated with like a wooden frame and stuff. So it is technically possible, kind of. But an important point to remember in this theoretical Lego construction is that if part of the structure starts failing, the entirety of it is almost definitely going to fail. So like, as an example, in that episode, they did a part where they made structural beams out of Legos. They had an example where they had one with closed ends and one with open ends. And the open-ended one broke at like 11 kilograms of weight. And the closed-ended one broke at 16 kilograms of weight. So like having that structural integrity all the way through is very important to this theoretical structure. So the problem with, say, a house or an apartment building is that somewhere in that house or apartment building, you're going to have a very dense object. So even if, theoretically, it would stand on its own, you know, empty, somewhere you're going to have, and the one that I thought of that was going to be like the real problem probably, is like a refrigerator. And a refrigerator is somewhere between like 170 and 350 pounds empty, depending on what model refrigerator is. And that's going to be just sort of concentrated all in one spot. And it's basically definitely going to go through the floor. And once that goes through the floor, that whole floor is going to lose its structural integrity and collapse. And then, of course, it's also dropping down through the building at that point. And if a Lego floor can't hold a refrigerator that's stationary, it definitely can't stop one that's falling downwards.
Also, the three other refrigerators from the floors above it.
Exactly, yeah. So I kind of figure that basically every building is coming down.
Yeah, there's a lot of heavy stuff in buildings.
Yeah, I figure your two main pain points are going to be fridges and, like, window AC units. Because window AC units are, like, an awkward, like, torque on it, too.
What about, like, elevators?
Elevators, yeah. And a more... I was thinking about, like, my building, which doesn't have elevators. But, yeah. Bigger buildings are definitely... Definitely coming. Like, the one I thought of is, and my initial statement was, don't be anywhere near, like, the Burj Khalifa, because that's going to be terrifying. But also, I think I kind of want to be, like, kind of close to the Burj Khalifa when it goes down in Lego form. Yeah, that's going to be incredible. Like, think about how awesome, like, those videos of them, like, demolishing buildings with charges from inside are. But think about that, but it's, like, super multicolored and also, like, 180 stories or whatever.
And there'd be so many Legos to build other things with.
This is true. So basically, yeah. So long story short, pretty much every building is going to come down. Like every there's going to be something heavy somewhere on upper floor, and that's going to take the whole building down. So my next question I had to figure out was, if you are in, you know, your apartment, are you going to survive this change? So I thought about my situation. So I live on the third floor of my building. It's the top floor. There's also a basement. So that's also going to turn into Legos, I'm assuming. So I'm effectively falling four stories. So if it happens at night, I will be on my bed. I think I can survive that. Like, people have fallen like three stories and survived. They've like broken limbs and stuff. Broken is not a word. Broken limbs and stuff. But like, you can survive that definitely. And I think if I'm on a bed and like crashing through floors like, oh, slow me down, I think I will survive. If I were on the second floor, maybe not, because the third floor is coming down from on top of me. But
some
on the
dick
top
bag
floor,
named Ben's going to land right on top of you.
Exactly, yeah.
I am on the 18th floor, so...
Oh, you are a goner.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's too far. I am sorry. Your whole building is kind of hosed. Because you're either high enough that you're not going to survive, or low enough that...
Everything's going to fall.
You're not going to survive. Right. So, let's say that happens. I'm going to say that I survive basically unharmed. A decent portion of people, I think, will be mostly okay. Like, if you live in your own home, you're probably fine.
There might be a few people with, like, parachutes in their apartments somewhere. Emergency parachutes.
We have to be wearing the parachute deployed.
When you sleep, yeah.
Also, that's not going to work for, like, a three-story building. Parachutes don't really work on that kind of vertical scale.
Well, for my, like, skyscraper situation.
If you're in the Burj Khalifa.
Yeah.
If you're in the Burj Khalifa
and
already
with
wearing a parachute.
You'll be okay, maybe. The next thing I have to deal with is so think about how much it sucks to step on a Lego. Now think about that you've just collapsed into a building's worth of Legos and you were sleeping, so you're definitely not wearing shoes.
It's so bad, Ben. It's so
and
bad.
And your shoes are embedded in Legos.
I will say growing up that my floor in my bedroom was always at least 70% Lego. And I don't know why, but, like, this one period growing up, like, maybe, like, 9 to 11-ish, I had a habit, like, every once in a while, like, I would, like, roll out of bed in my sleep.
Oh, no.
And I would roll, and I would land on my floor of Legos. And it's like, ow, thud. One, you feel stupid.
Right.
And then, two, you go, and, like, I look at my arm, and they're just, like, Legos, like, stuck in my skin. Like, they're just... jammed in there, and like every once in a while it's like bleeding a little bit, and it's just like you pull it out and there's just like very clearly like that was a 2x4 over by my forearm, and this
right.
one was a 2x2, and this was a minifigure, and you just like slowly pull them out of your arm, you're like, this I'm still not cleaning my room.
Yeah. One other thing I actually kind of bring up before I progress with like the living the life thing, but think about how either awesome and or terrifying this would sound.
It's terrifying. A lot of Legos is a terrifying sound.
Yeah.
I feel like it'd be really loud.
It would be incredibly loud, because it would just be like every building basically simultaneously just like imploding into plastic bricks. So yeah, so that'd be cool and terrifying. So yeah, so assuming you can like climb out of your basement, the world's definitely going to be different because, you know, basically every building is just a pile of Legos now. So this is kind of one of those society kind of collapses thing along with all the buildings. But that's kind of most of the story, I think, is that, yeah, all the buildings are gone. But one thing I did also think about, I kind of want to get your guys' opinion on this one. I think it would. So would you consider, would like subway tunnels also become Lego?
Oh.
Ooh, that's tricky.
It's
a
right?
infrastructure.
Yeah.
Huh?
I don't know.
I feel like it would.
The exact question, what if all buildings were made of Legos? I don't consider a tunnel a building. I'll say that.
That's technically the question, yeah.
Okay, I guess, yeah, if you interpret it as buildings...
Because I would have said that a bridge would turn into a Lego, but based on that criteria, I would say no, then.
Right.
Well, Ben, tell me what happens when the tunnels go bad.
Well, if the tunnels go bad...
I don't want to hear it.
So what's going to be fun is that you look at a city like Boston that has, you know, this pretty big, you know, underground rail network. Basically, everywhere that it was, you're just going to have, like... Not like a big chasm, but it's going to collapse, obviously. You're just going to have like gouges across the roads where, you know, there was a subway tunnel once. Now there's just like a hole full of Legos. Don't fall in.
Careful.
Yeah, not a good fall. Yeah, I think there's anything super like big on that one aside from just making traversing this terrifying Lego-filled world a little more treacherous. But yeah, I guess we didn't really think about like what infrastructure would go. I guess, like, bridges probably wouldn't, because, like, roads wouldn't.
Yeah, I think just strictly buildings.
Yeah.
Here's a question. Just the day before this, I put all my money in Lego stock. Does the stock go up or down?
I don't think people are trading stocks anymore.
No, people are just going to be trading stocks, Ben. Don't underestimate those Wall Street folks.
I think stock goes down, because...
I would say stock definitely goes down.
They're not going to be able to sell Legos anymore. Legos are just
no,
everywhere.
But... you still can manufacture the specific pieces people need.
Oh.
And people are going to want specific Legos.
That's actually a really good point.
Like, the world is now Lego-based, and you are the Lego manufacturer. You gotta have some power here.
That's actually a really good point. I think you're right. I think it's
but
not
you just
not
had
just...
all the Legos that you need, theoretically, just appear out of nowhere. You just need to sort them out, right?
But what if the Lego Corporation could manufacture pieces that make join into particularly useful shapes much easier?
I think that's Lego's already designed to do that.
Yeah,
then.
That's a good point. You're right, actually.
Legos
that's
are designed to combine efficiently into good shapes.
That's kind of what Legos are, aren't they? Okay.
What if Lego made a piece that interlocked with another piece?
Yes. You know how much fun it is to stick two Legos and hold them next to each other? What if you could connect them?
What if they held themselves together?
My God.
Oh, my God. Oh, I think we're onto something. Let's get a patent going.
Yeah. Yep. Anyway, that's kind of the end of my answer. It's one of those things where it's like, there's not a whole lot of like immediate societal changes because immediate society has literally collapsed.
I get it.
Yeah, you see what I did there. So let's sort of roll forward to a slightly rebuilt future. Chris, what did you do?
Yes, you destroyed everything. I want to see if we can rebuild everything.
We have the technology.
Well, you don't need too much technology. You just got to put some fucking Legos back together.
Right.
Yeah, our technology is Legos. Now, I wanted to start off by saying, normally when you design a building, it takes longer than a couple hours. So I cut a lot of corners and I simplified a lot of things.
Cutting corners is tricky because Legos are all corners.
But on your what you have going for you, Chris, is that you do have a degree in designing buildings.
I do.
This is true. That's exactly what it says on the diploma, building designer.
Yeah, so to start out, I wanted to look at what material Legos are made of, and they are made of ABS, which is short for...
Abs.
Abs. It's not short for abs, it just is abs.
It's actually long for abs.
Yeah.
Sorry, I couldn't resist.
It's acrylonitrile butanidine styrene. It's just a type of plastic.
Right.
And I found a bunch of properties on this type of plastic, like the different types of strength, like tensile strength, compressive strength, flexural strength. So I was going to use that. One of the problems with Legos, obviously, is that the weak point would be at where they like interlock, because they're just going to like snap off, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's where glue comes in. I was thinking of using glue just to keep them together. But I actually looked into it, and apparently at like Legoland and all those places, they don't use glue. They use a solvent called MEK, short for methyl ethyl ketone. And this basically just loosens the surface molecules of the plastic and effectively like welds the pieces together.
Oh.
See, that's cheating. Glue is fine. That's fucking cheating.
I don't know. They use it at Legoland, so I'm going to use it. So basically, if you put two pieces together, I'm going to say it's effectively one piece and that you don't have that break anymore where they connect.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So to start off, designing a building, there are different types of loads that you usually look at. It's dead load, live load, wind load, snow loads, earthquake loads. I ignored some of them. I really only wanted to look at like gravity loads just to simplify it. So dead load and live load. Dead load is like all the permanent loads. So in our case, it would probably just be the self weight of the building. And then live loads would be like the people walking around in the building, all the furniture and stuff like that.
Ben falling right from the third floor.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah.
So those are the loads we're looking at. I also used load factors. Now, I got my load factors from a building code, but I forget which building code it was. I didn't write it down when I found it, but...
it's in there.
Yeah, it's in there.
IBC International Building Code is probably where it's from.
So I got 1.2 for the dead load and 1.6 for the live load. So those are the factors I used.
So those for non-engineers are numbers you multiply your loads by. So if you have 100 pounds, you say 120 pounds because we actually don't know what the fuck we're doing. It's literally the reason we do that.
So to start off, I wanted to just start off with the floor because that's pretty simple. So I was looking at a 50 by 50 foot house. I just wanted to make like a really simple house. So 50 foot by 50 foot, 10 feet high ceilings. It's basically just one room, so it's just like a cube. So for a 50 foot by 50 foot, the floor would have to be... So for the floor, it would be flat, but you want them to interlock, so it would have to be two layers so that they can interlock, right?
Yeah.
You don't want them just like sitting next to each other. So the floor would be two layers, and that would be 1.9 million bricks. That's assuming, so for this whole thing, I was using 2x2, like the standard 2x2 brick. You could probably use other bricks, but I just wanted to use all the same brick just for simplicity's sake. So that's our floor. Now to add the walls. For the walls, I just had one like thickness, one brick thickness of wall to start out with, and we can change it if we need to. But the walls would have to be 964 bricks long and 317 bricks high. So each wall would be 1.2 million bricks.
That would be an expensive wall because I know on average for like current modern Legos, like it's about 10 cents per brick.
Yeah.
If you buy like a set. So if you bought the wall set, it would just be like $100,000.
Jesus.
I mean, if you're buying in bulk, maybe discounts. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe discount to like $60,000.
Yeah.
So if we have our four walls, we want to add our roof slab. And the roof slab would be the same as the floor, just be a flat thing. So it'd be 1.9 million. But the difference is it's not supported by ground. So you need to make sure it can support itself. So, well, analyzing the roof slab, I looked at it as, in engineering terms, I looked at it as a simple span.
Yep.
I don't think it's actually a simple span, but just for simplicity's sake, again.
It acts mostly like one, I think. Keep going.
With the 50 by 50 foot roof slab, I found that the maximum flexural stress of the roof slab is 14,000 PSI. And I found that the strength of ABS plastic is 10,000 PSI. So we need a column somewhere to support it. So I added a column to the middle. And with the column in the middle, it reduces the stress to 3,600 PSI. So that's way lower than our strength, which is good. So we really only need one column.
That is much less than I expected.
Yeah, that's way less.
That's only the weight of the roof.
Oh, true. Yeah.
If we say add, I don't know, a little bit of snow or
anything.
A small bird.
And then next I looked at the column to see if it, like how big the column needed to be. I actually found an article that said a standard 2x2 brick can support 950 pounds before it starts to deform in compression. So I converted that to a compressive strength and found that the compressive strength is 2,400 psi. And the weight of the roof on the column is 434 pounds. So distributed over the area of the column, it would be 1,100 psi. So we actually only need a column that's one brick in dimension. It'd be a super thin column.
I'm starting to become doubtful of this math now.
I mean, it's very possible that I made a mistake somewhere. Again, I did this in 2 hours.
I'm a little dubious myself, despite having no civil engineering background.
I am dubious on the fact that wooden columns are a little bit thicker than that.
Well, wooden columns are designed to hold more than just the self-weight of plastic.
That's a good point.
I guess that's true. We can make a very pretty Lego building that no one would be able to be allowed to go into.
Yeah.
Or, like, breathe on.
Yeah, so now we have a floor, we have walls, we have a roof that holds together. Next thing that most buildings usually have is a foundation to hold it all. So I wanted to figure out how much this whole thing weighs. So the entire building without a foundation has 4.9 million bricks. And I found out that each brick, each 2x2 brick, weighs 0.0025 pounds. So the entire building will weigh 14,000 pounds. Now, distributed over the 50-foot by 50-foot floor, that gives us a bearing pressure on the soil of 5.9 PSF.
That's not a lot.
But yeah, that's very low. Just to give some context to that, the average bearing capacity of like a clay or silty clay, sandy silt, which is like on the lower spectrum of soil, that has a capacity of like 2,000 PSF. So we're nowhere close to that.
Yeah, we could put like 1,000 buildings on top of each other.
Yeah,
we 1,000 Lego buildings.
Right. We just don't need a foundation. Yeah, so that's the building just supporting its own weight. But we want an actual functional building. We want to support live loads. So from that code that I got, I found the uniform live load uses 40 PSF, like a distributed live load. It's like a, I don't know how you describe it, just a uniform load over the entire floor, I guess, downward.
Yeah, like an average, what you should expect on average for stuff moving around in a typical building.
Yeah, that's what the code uses. Obviously, our floor right now doesn't support that. But there are a few ways we can try to fix that. We can add more columns. We can add beams, maybe. What I chose to do is just increase the thickness of the slab. And if we want to support this, then the slab needs to be 137 bricks thick.
There we go. There's the Lego map I know and love.
That's the one.
Which actually, it's only like 4.3 feet thick. It's not that thick, actually.
That's pretty thick.
It's still pretty thick.
Yeah, I was remembering, Ben, I think you had said that beam they were trying to make in the show supported, what, 11 kilograms before it broke?
The closed end one was 16. And they made a double thick one that was like 40, I think I wrote that down somewhere, 43 kilograms.
And how many bricks do you think that was like deep?
It wasn't that big, actually. It was
like a foot and a half. It was like regular beam sized.
Yeah.
But yeah, 40 kilograms doth not a person weigh.
Right.
So obviously this is a really thick slab, roof slab. And it can work. It will support it, but it will add some weight to the column, as well as the uniform loads to the column. Mm-hmm. So we need to increase the thickness of our column too. So instead of just one brick thick and wide, it needs to be six bricks thick and wide, which is still surprisingly kind of small, right?
Yeah.
The same for the walls too. The walls need to be six bricks thick.
That's a tongue twister, huh?
Six bricks thick. And then, yeah, this would work. This would support someone standing on it, I think. I mean, I don't know for sure, but...
Stamp it.
Yeah.
Stamp it, Chris. Stamp it and build it. Ship it off.
And then, just for the foundation thing, I wanted to check to see, because we added some weight, do we need a foundation? And turns out, no, we still don't need a foundation, because the bearing pressure is only 146 PSF. So, with that bearing pressure, we would be able to build up to 13 stories without a foundation. So you just basically just copy and paste each floor 13 times and it would still work.
There we go. I don't know why we're not building buildings like this right now. Sounds super easy.
Yeah, I know.
Just make them out of plastic.
The thing is, my assumption, because I said there that all the pieces were all welded together and that it basically acts as just like a solid piece of plastic, but Legos have empty space in them, so it probably wouldn't really work. There's a lot of empty space in interlocked Legos, but I didn't really know how to account for that, so I didn't.
All right.
But that's what I did. What about you, Marcus?
Well, you thought you tackled a tough building to accomplish. I decided to think of what I thought the hardest structure to rebuild after the Lego apocalypse was. And I think the hardest thing to do with Legos is gonna be an aquarium.
Yeah, Legos really aren't waterproof.
Yeah, so that's the very first problem. And I think you can get past that either using the chemical that you mentioned, or, you know, glue can make the gaps waterproof. Like, you can waterproof things.
Right.
So, the water leaking out is not the biggest problem. The problem is water pressure. So, the smaller aquarium tanks, like the ones on the walls, like, you have, like, your big fancy tanks with the sharks and stuff in them. Then you got the ones where, like the display ones, where, like, they have, like, little, you know, it'll be like, hey, there's these eight fish in this little tank. Check it out. They're typically about 2,000 gallons, which translates out to about 11 feet wide, 6 feet tall, and then 4 feet deep, you know, going back for a display tank. If you take that, at the bottom of the glass, the water pressure is 375 pounds per square foot, which water adds up real quick. So going into my structural degree... At 11 feet wide, the water pressure generates a bending moment of 5,671 foot-pounds at the center of the wall, which doesn't really mean too much as a number, but it's basically how much is trying to push the center of the wall out. And so what are we resisting that with? The problem with Legos is they're made out of plastic, and there's not that many transparent ones.
There are some, though.
There are some. The biggest one I found is the 1x6x5 clear panel, which is one stud thick, six studs wide, and five studs tall. So this is the biggest one that's going to give you probably the biggest viewing area that you're going to get out of a single brick, which is 2 inches by 2 inches. So it's already not great, but it's what you have to work with. And I've seen these bricks before. I have a couple, like, at home. And I can tell you are not going to be able to see through two of them back to back. So you have one brick thick to work with. So doing the same thing where I ignore the seams between the bricks, because I actually couldn't find any data on how strong Leo connections are, which is pretty bizarre to me that that doesn't exist.
It's actually a little
there's like
weird,
a million reports on how strong Legos are, but all of them are like, you know, talk about the plastic strength. And I'm like, no, tell me how they connect. Anyhow, so the maximum bending moment, which from the water pressure was 5,600, that a one-piece thick Lego wall can resist is only 1,000 foot-pounds. So about 20% of what we needed for a six-foot-deep tank. Which means we can only make water tanks as deep as 1 foot if we want to be able to see into them. So that's a problem. You're gonna have to give up some of the bigger fish, aka all the bigger fish. So what can you do with an aquarium where you can only have water that's 1 foot deep? Some basic stuff is still intact. Like you have your touch tank. Maybe it's slightly shallower and friendlier and smaller than it was, but that's gonna work for you. But you need some kind of draw to bring people in. Nobody's going to come in to look at a bunch of puddles. And doing some research online, one thing I found that is not in aquariums, but is done in a few bars across the country, is goldfish racing.
What?
Where, where you make a channel, a small channel, and you like have a bunch of them next to each other, separated, and you put a goldfish in each one, and then you can race the goldfish to the end. So the bar version is like, you know, it's like maybe like, you know, 4 or 5 inches each one. And then, you know, the bar patrons like will can like mess with, you know, splash a little bit or something to motivate the fish to like, you know, to get to the end. But I think in an aquarium, you can just do like a super legit version of this. So like in my head, my like end game picture is you basically have like a hamster maze of like these 1 foot tall, like tunnels like going across, like maybe a wall has like six stacked on top of each other, and like there's some shooting across the room, and maybe you got like some cameras and stuff to like show which races are going on. And for like a foot deep tank, what you are gonna have enough space to have like the goldfish racers and some predator fish. Like you have your bait fish do the racing, and like your bigger fish that are the cool fish like chasing the fish that are racing to motivate them to go through. So you're going to have some really cool action just going on all the time. Like, it's just going to be an interlocked maze, and there's going to be fish, like, zooming by all the time.
So just to make this perfectly clear, you have taken aquariums, one of our nation's foremost, like, educational experience for children, and turned it basically into a combination of horse racing and dogfighting.
Yeah!
Nice.
Think how
awesome.
Much money they're gonna
that sounds
make
cool.
Now.
Yeah.
They're going to be able to make so much money off the betting so that they can have like more money to teach the children about, you know, betting odds and where
it's really about math, you know. It's learning about probability.
Look, if you have the gift shop and you have like team shirts for like your fish that won that day, you're going to sell so much more merchandise. This is going to be actually like a more awesome business that you could just do. There's nothing preventing you from making this.
Yeah, you can do it right now.
Maybe PETA might try to stop you.
PETA did shut down a bar that was doing goldfish racing.
That's actually
upset.
Incredibly
not like shut down the bar, but you know,
right.
I guess sent the owner a bunch of emails until they were like, I'm sick of these fucking emails from PETA. I guess I'll just change my Tuesday activity to like regular trivia. But I mean, I think I fixed aquariums. Which is all I needed to do with Legos.
So
and now I'm just going to...
You said the tunnels are going to be in, like, mazes?
Well, yeah, like, they'll be, like, just in my head, like, you know, there'll be, like, a tunnel shooting, like, over the, you know, over a walkway that you're going by, and, like, a few,
okay.
So they're just, like, they're everywhere.
I imagined, like a hamster maze for a goldfish, which, like...
I mean, you could do that, too.
Goldfish aren't really known for their memory.
They're specifically known not for their memory.
Yeah, they are known for their memory, but not in a good way.
Yeah.
I would grow this aquarium, though. I think I'm excited about it.
I would, too.
We'll be back next week with the following questions. What if balloons never popped or deflated? And who would win in a superhero fight? If you have any questions, comments, or your own hypothetical idea you want us to answer, let us know. You can reach us by email at absurdhypotheticals@gmail.com. Send us a tweet at absurdhype. That's H-Y-P-E hype. Visit our website, www.nerdchomp.com/absurdhypotheticals. And if you enjoyed the show, don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review on iTunes. It really helps out the show and lets us keep making it for you.